Welcome in the Dan and Dalton College Football Show.
Yeah.
Another Friday night for you if you're listening live on FM Talk 106.5.
Sure is fun talking football.
It really is. If you're a podcaster, then you get this on Friday mornings at 9 a.m. when we publish it. But we're rolling through the season, and so we are in the FM Talk 106.5 College Pick'em Pool as well, which we detail on this show. As you and I,
as painfully as it is for me,
yeah, and it's painful for me too. I'm just not as far back this year as you. I think you might have whooped my tail last year and the year prior, but this year at least I'm hanging above 500. But if you want to win our pick'em pool and get that awesome prize from Spring Hill Ace Hardware at the end of the year, it's looking like you need to bat a little better than 500. Our two that are tied for the lead right now, and DGAPANBTT,
yeah,
still holding the lead.
Okay.
That reminder stands for don't give a blank about nothing but the tide, mm-hmm, the Roll Tide Willie saying there. He's now tied with Roll Tider 21. They're both 53-27. So they've had outstanding years picking them.
That's a great year. I think I'm probably 12 under 500 right now. That's where I'm at.
I'm 45-35, so I'm 8 games behind the leaders there, which is basically an entire week.
Well, but that's, you know, that's not bad. And we do have a lot of weeks left. You could gain some ground here.
Hope so. But if you're playing along, we appreciate it and kind of use that as a means to talk about the games from last weekend and then preview this weekend's games, as we'll give you our picks for Saturday's action at the end of the show. We'll also have Paul Feinbaum on, our weekly chat with him in the third segment, and the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl, our conversation with Drew Fabianich, coming at you in this next segment. But let's talk about last week's games, Dan, and had one person in our pick and pool go 9-1.
Man.
M. Frazier. And then
I can only dream.
Handful, maybe six folks who went 8-2, and then plenty of others who went 7-3. I went 6-4 this past week.
I used to have weeks like that. It was last season.
Last season. And there were some, I mean, the games are tough. We obviously pick with the line, pick against the line, and that makes things incredibly more difficult. Let's start with that Vanderbilt ranked game against LSU. I had the stat earlier this week on Mobile Mornings. I think that's the first time that Vanderbilt has been favored in an SEC game in a very, very long time. And they won. They beat LSU 31-24. Diego Pavia pretty much putting the entire game on his shoulders, like, yeah, we've seen him do time and time again.
They were giving away 2.5 points and covered.
And covered, yeah, by a whole touchdown win. They won by 7, covered the 2.5 points. And Pavia doing the Heisman pose, their best start in 75 years, the Commodores.
Yeah, I did pick them, too, among my choices from a week ago. Great win for – I said at the time, Vanderbilt is better at doing what Vanderbilt does. LSU's more like scattered, like, mm-hmm, what's quite wrong with them offensively? And everybody says quarterback's hurt, and I guess that's it. But Pavia's not hurt.
No, he's not. And Nussmeier, draft stock, it has to have taken a bit of a dive,
yeah,
from the beginning of the year when,
sure,
he was listed among the Heisman contenders. Another player who was listed among those contenders, the quarterback for South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And they have not in any way rose to the level that so many expected with that team.
And Oklahoma just walked in there and spanked them.
They did. And I was on the wrong side of both of those games. I took LSU, figured they'd find some offense.
Uh-huh.
And I took South Carolina at home, thinking that the Sooners would be a little bit behind after the Red River shootout loss. But Lenora Sellers, 124 yards passing, and he wasn't the leading rusher. That went to Faison. So South Carolina with some real issues and nowhere near covering against Oklahoma.
Yeah, and a quarterback that everybody was doubting coming into the year, including me, would be our boy Gunnar Stockton.
Yeah.
Georgia, incredible performance by Stockton against Ole Miss. Again, they find themselves behind again. They're down 11 in the fourth quarter. They outscore Ole Miss 17-0. Stockton was so beat up from the Auburn game that he didn't even practice early in the week.
Wow.
So, and Kirby said he was going to take any quarterback running out of the offense, and Stockton said, heck no, this team needs to see me run. That gives him juice. And he actually ran for a 22-yard touchdown. He had a remarkable game.
He did. And my love for Gunnar Stockton.
He's your guy.
He's my guy now. And that seems to happen a lot with Georgia quarterbacks. As a Tennessee fan, and you and I talk about those teams so much, You know, I really liked
Bennett,
Stetson Bennett, even though he did the call me after scoring against the Vols early on.
Well, they all got his phone number, and they kind of ticked him off.
I just love the fire in a quarterback like that, and you see it in Pavia, and you see it in Gunner, but they take it two different ways. Gunner is so quiet, and we joke about his demeanor in these interviews, but you were listening to a podcast, or I forget what it was. Kirby said that in the huddle, he's a different human being.
Yeah, one of the wide receivers did. They said, like, he's the nicest guy in the world, but when he gets in the huddle, if he is annoyed by something, he lets us know. So that's a guy that he's a take charge guy, and you know, you could be a take charge guy, but to produce the numbers and the plays on the field, that's two different things, right?
Yeah, it is. I just think once Georgia gets into the playoff, and I'm assuming that they will, there is no team in the country that's been through what they've been through and come out on top. The closest, I think, would be Alabama as far as the kind of tests they've faced and having to respond from that early season loss and then play some really tough games.
Yeah, Georgia could have four losses right now. Think about that.
Man, but Gunner is the reason for many of those games that they did not.
We thought he was going to be a weakness.
Oh, yeah, going in. You're right. Florida did not cover. They were 9.5-point favorites in the swamp against Mississippi State. They only win by two, and then Billy Napier shown the door right afterwards.
Yeah, off he goes. Billy Gonzalez, who in the world is that? He's the interim head coach of your Florida Gators now.
Yeah, and we'll see if they respond, like so many teams do when they fire a head coach. Texas A&M did not cover against Arkansas. The Aggies were 7.5-point favorites, and it was pretty similar in many ways to the Tennessee game against Arkansas, where A&M was in control for much of the game, even though it was a one-score game for a lot of it. But then they get an 11-point lead. Arkansas responds. They get another 11-point lead. Arkansas responds in the fourth quarter. Again, they score, and Arkansas just kept matching them, even though A&M had a good 10-point lead for a time. By the end of it, Arkansas was well within the number.
Another one of my losses. I thought Texas A&M could cover, but Arkansas was pesky. And that Petrino-led offense looks like it's getting it done.
Yeah, it does. We talked about Georgia having some issues every time they go into Lexington to play. It's the same thing for the Vols, too, for the most part, when they play their rival, one of their rivals, the Kentucky Wildcats, and we're getting that this weekend. But Texas got a taste of that as an SEC team for the first time, I believe, this past weekend. And
you're right.
Only beat Kentucky in overtime, 16-13, and the Longhorns were 11.5-point favorites.
I mean, the Texas offensive funk continues. They're just not producing. Their defense has been pretty good, but against Kentucky, that's not you can't really measure it against a team that offense is pretty weak. But their offense, again, stays in a funk on the road, and they barely get out with a win.
If you look at the box score, the team stats, it's really a miracle that Texas won that game. Mm. Kentucky outgained them 395 yards to 175 yards.
Wow.
How amazing is that? 26 Kentucky first downs to 8 Longhorns first downs.
They got their butt beat.
Texas had 4 more penalties for 25 more yards than Kentucky did. Kentucky converted more on third down and had a 40-20 time of possession, but Texas found a way to win it.
Wow, I don't know if that's good news, bad news for Stoops, but he's another one that's got to be feeling some heat.
Yeah, he has to be. Alabama, and we'll cover this plenty throughout the show with Drew Fabianich and Paul Feinbaum, but the Tide easily cover. You look at the final score, 37-20. They were 8.5-point favorites, and it only means so much coming from the fan of the losing team. Tennessee had the horses to run with them this weekend. Poor play calling, poor execution in some cases.
I mean,
really,
14-point swing on one play.
Yeah, and that was too much to come back from.
Yeah.
And then you add into that some of the offensive penalties, and it's just Tennessee on the road under Heupel. Got to get used to it.
I didn't realize that was a thing. That was a trend, Tennessee on the road. But that team that I saw in that game on the road, they just about personified every kind of thing you don't want to do on the road.
Yeah.
Big turnovers and little costly penalties.
And it's cool to see Ryan Williams really picking it up, and he led Bama in receiving again. And I'll talk about it with Fabianich here in a minute. Jeremy Bernard stood out to me.
Yeah.
Basically, other than Ty Simpson, more than anyone else on that offense.
I think he's standing out to a lot of NFL scouts.
He's got to be. Another one outside of the SEC, Notre Dame covered 34-24 win as 9.5-point home favorites over the USC Trojans. Auburn in overtime. This is one of those that you're an overtime away from covering or not covering. That's as simple as it is. But they lose to Missouri at Jordan-Hare, and the Tigers from Missouri end up covering as 1.5-point favorites, 23-17.
It's like, what else can fate hand the Tigers and their fans? Overtime loss to Mizzou. I mean, right there, another chance to win it, and chances don't mean anything to Auburn. They're not taking advantage of the opportunities. Obviously, the refs might have had something to do with the loss against Georgia.
Yeah, and you know, you've mentioned Georgia so often as a slow-starting team that figures it out. Auburn's kind of been the opposite this year. Not in all games. They've had some complete duds. Mm-hmm. But they look pretty good in the first quarter, these last first half sometimes, these last couple games, and then everything just falls apart. So we'll see how Auburn responds. And then just to kind of wrap up our 10 games we were paying attention to last week, the Holy War, is that what they call
it? Yeah,
that
the Utah and BYU.
And I picked Utah on this one. They were 3.5-point favorites at BYU, but you can never count out the home crowd and the motivation of a home team in a rivalry game like that. BYU took care of business.
Yeah, what was the final score? Because that was Utah was favored, and I was going with them.
BYU won outright as 3.5-point dogs. They won 24-21.
Okay, all right, yeah. That's an underrated rivalry out there. Great game to watch.
All right, coming back, we're going to have Drew Fabianich on with us. He's the executive director of the Panini Senior Bowl. Some big-time players and big-time games we'll discuss with him. Then with Paul Feinbaum, kind of a preview of the games coming up this weekend, and then Dan and I will wrap up the show today/tonight with our picks for this week. So stay tuned. This is Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig's College Football Show.
Drew Fabianich with the Panini Senior Bowl is our guest this morning to talk a little college football.
Hey, Drew, good morning.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dalton. How you doing?
Hey, we're great, and I know you guys are working your tails off. I don't know how you're going to do it. I mean, Senior Bowl, we'll be here before we know it, January 31st, and you have your work cut out for you because there are some really great players around this country, and you've got to really narrow it down for the Senior Bowl. You have your work, your team does, cut out for you week in and week out.
Yeah, I was going to say, the key word you said is we do have a team that's working on this. I'm doing as many as I possibly can in between, you know, a lot of different things that I have to handle. But we've got, you know, 10 scouts that do it, you know, great on the road, go to games. We've got two scouting assistants in-house with Jackson Roby and Michael Newsom. And, you know, and Jack Gilmore handles a lot, too. Mm-hmm. So, we do watch a lot of players, and we are narrowing it down. We're going to have our meetings with our scouts at the end of October. We're going to start getting ready for the invites. The invites are going to go out in middle November. That's just the first round of invites, though.
Okay. And I don't know if you had to draw straws or what, who gets to decide who goes to see the third Saturday in October. But, I mean, we had SEC game after SEC game, ranked after ranked, and you could really just keep it on ABC and see some of the best games of the year, week in and week out. But that Tide win over the Vols, and surprisingly the stats, Tennessee won in a lot of the statistical categories, but the only one that matters, Bama, won by 17 points. And Drew, you know, of course, a lot of love for Ty Simpson, and Ryan Williams went off. He had a great night, but the player I couldn't quit looking at and raving over was Jeremy Bernard. And I know he's a senior receiver. He didn't have the most eye-popping statistical game, but he seemed to get Bama out of trouble, or when the offense would kind of stall, he just kept them moving and actually led the team in rushing with 49 yards and second in receiving with 60 yards. I really like Jeremy Bernard. I bet some NFL teams do too.
Yeah, they do. And you know, about the one thing about him is he's big and he's quarterback friendly. And what I mean by that is that whether he's covered or not, you know, he's probably coming down with a contested ball. Like physical guys that use their body like he does, you know, I'm not comparing him to, but I'm saying he kind of reminds me a little bit of Anquan Boldin.
Hmm.
You know, especially with the ball in his hand, he's probably a little bit faster than Anquan was. And for those of you that don't know who Anquan Boldin is, you might want to look him up.
Yeah, I remember him back in the day. I thought he was a high school quarterback. Maybe he was committed to Alabama at a time. But maybe he's from Alabama. I don't know.
I can't remember that.
I know he went to Florida State, but he may be a Birmingham kid, but a really good player 25 years ago or so.
And of course, an incredible NFL career.
Yes, with the Cardinals, mm-hmm. Right. When you project someone being an Anquan Boldin, that's a very good thing.
Yeah, it is.
And, of course, you know, he had someone throwing him the ball, too. And Ty Simpson, week in and week out, just gets it done and keeps him out of dangerous situations for the most part while also delivering some NFL-level throws. But when you look at kind of the leaders in the clubhouse as far as quarterbacks, and I know we have a lot of good juniors. Diego Pavia is somebody who's going to have to find an NFL team that fits his mold, you know, but you've got Simpson, Gunnar Stockton is looking incredible. Fernando Mendoza out there with Indiana, who's now second in the nation.
Yeah, he was a transfer from Cal.
Pavia, Marcel Reed, a lot of really good quarterbacks to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and I actually mentioned on my first media appearance on NFL Network, I mentioned Fernando Mendoza because the week before I'd actually watched him against Auburn when he played at Cal. And yep. I said, you know, he carved Auburn up, and Auburn was pretty darn good on defense, you know, and Fernando didn't have a lot of talent surrounding him at Cal. I was really interested to see how he'd do at Indiana, and Sig's done a great job surrounding him with, you know, some really good skill players, and they're playing really, really well. There's a lot of them. You're correct. There's some that have been positives and done some real positive things, but there's some that have, you know, kind of, you know, shown some, you know, negative, you know, kind of performance that could actually hurt their draft status. But again, I'm going to give them the year to let them play through it and find out exactly who they are, because, you know, fighting through adversity is one thing about, you know, playing quarterback you've got to be able to do, especially in the NFL.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point, is that we're now just past the halfway part of the year. So, you know, we make these, I don't know.
Conclusions
too early sometimes on players and on teams as well. Drew, you know,
you mean like Arch Manning?
Well, yeah, that would be one of them, but one of many, right? We say we know in October this is what this team is, and in the end we find out, man, they got better or they got worse or something went on, and we were incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, go back just last year when Michigan beat Ohio State. I mean, everybody's saying, well, you know, they're not going to win the national championship. Well, sure enough, they did.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you got to let these guys kind of filter through it. I mean, look at UCLA. Look what they're doing right now. I mean, again, they fired the head coach and they haven't lost a game since. So,
well, they're probably about to.
Well, I mean, you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, would you have thought SMU would have walked into Clemson to beat them?
No. And you know, you mentioned Clemson. I include Klubnik. You look at Nussmeier. You look at Carson Beck after Friday night. And those three guys were in the lead for first overall pick and Heisman status. And now, because the teams around them are having some issues, they are as well. How much does that matter to NFL coaches? Maybe they want to see a top-tier quarterback lose a couple games and see how they respond to that adversity.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of what I was talking about. I mean, because, again, when you go to the NFL, I mean, everybody gets paid to coach. I mean, and you're gonna face some really good coaching and you're going to face some really good players, and you're not going to win every game. So you have to find out how these guys are going to actually adapt to it, and are they going to answer the bell or not? And you know, some have, some haven't. And I'm still going, like I said, I'm still going to give them some room to improve.
When you look,
there's still a lot of football left.
Yes,
there really is.
Drew, when you look at the NFL rookie class this year, are there any players that that were at the Senior Bowl last year that are catching your attention at all?
You know, I'll be honest with you. I spend most of my time watching college ball. I only do a little bit of, you know, Pro Bowl on Sundays just when I get a chance, mm-hmm. because I really just don't have time. Because
Understood.
I'm catching up from Saturday. But, I mean, Jackson Dart's done a really good job. You know, you'd have to ask a lot of the people that were here before because, you know, I was at West Virginia last year. I don't remember who exactly were on the roster last year. So I'd be remiss in saying that I knew, other than I can tell you one alumni that blew it away yesterday was Bo Nix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what an incredible finish there in that game, too, Denver and New York. Yeah, he is something else to watch. You know, also, as far as running backs, we haven't said his name a whole lot this year, but Jeremiah Love up there at Notre Dame, and he had a big game in that win over USC, 228 yards rushing and a touchdown. He was somebody I was actually thinking about this weekend for my Tennessee Titans, who are having a rough year, and how much a running back like that can change not only, obviously, a college team, but we see they make quite the mark in their first few seasons in the NFL when they're that good.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, and it goes back to, like, Ezekiel Elliott when we added him with the Cowboys. I mean, he brought a different dimension that we hadn't had for years. And that goes all the way back to what, you know, Bill Polian, you know, said to Jerry Jones like a week before that, that Edgerrin James made the difference for Peyton Manning to go to the Super Bowl because they didn't have a running game. And they needed a running game to control the clock and actually play complementary football because they're giving the ball back too quickly because of, you know, throwing the ball so much.
Mm-hmm.
So they're giving teams too many possessions. So, yeah, they can make a difference, but now, and again, but their shelf life is very limited.
Yeah.
It is because, you know, after a while, the tread gets real thin and they slow down. And once they slow down, you know, the game eats them alive.
Mm. So a couple of quarterbacks that are intriguing to me, and this is, Dalton just said this off air, I've got to repeat it because it's so funny, but Gunnar Stockton, if you see him in interviews, he's got this Opie from Mayberry kind of thing going on where he's this innocent and a nice guy.
Happy.
The happy, doesn't have a bad word for anybody on his team. The team seems to love him. And he has really been producing during the games. And then you have Diego Pavia, Dalton said was his evil twin. So you've got these two guys who are gritty, but is there a place in pro football for people of that size and that skill set?
Well, I mean, smaller guys have gotten their opportunities lately. I mean, starting with Russell Wilson, Baker Mayfield, I mean, Kyler Murray. I mean, you just have to have a philosophy from the top down, you know, from the owner to the head coach, the offense coordinator, that you're willing to change an offense to suit the player.
Mm.
I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson does things, you know, a heck of a lot differently than a lot of them do. Now, he's not short in stature, but they change the offense to suit what he does best. And, again, you have to be able to sell the entire organization that you're willing to do that. And if you're willing to do that, some people have been successful with it, and some people haven't. So, you know, everybody can't be prototype. Everybody can't be, you know, 6'3" and a half and 220 pounds and, you know, have a rifle arm and, you know, be just enough an athlete to escape.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's not enough of those around. And there's more guys that are more of the dual threats now that maybe not as great a passer that may have a place in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, we're talking with Executive Director Drew Fabianich with the Panini Senior Bowl. There's guys everywhere, and I know the Senior Bowl, you guys have eyes pretty much all around the nation, but when you see a stat line, and I wasn't watching the game, so I didn't see every single carry, but a D3 running back this weekend out of Curry College, Monty Quinn, I don't know if you saw this, 522 yards rushing and 7 touchdowns,
huh. An
NCAA record. When you see a stat line like that, and, you know, they could be playing, I think in this case, that win came over Nichols. So 71-27 over Nichols. The competition isn't that stiff, but when you see a guy put up a stat line like that, do you at least watch the game tape? Or what do you do when you're trying to get guys in the Senior Bowl and you say, oh, this guy just ran for 522 in one game?
I think you have to. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, if it's available, I mean, take a peek at it. You know, there's not a lot of history of a lot of Division III players actually making it the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, there's very few. I mean, put it this way, in 18 years, I think I went to one Division III school, and it was Mount Union.
They went all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, and the one player actually did play for Jacksonville for probably about 6 or 7 years. Which I don't remember the kid's name, but yeah, he was a receiver at Mount Union. So, I mean, think about that. I was there 18 years, and one time I went to a Division III school.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm familiar with Division III, and it is definitely a very low-level college football. I mean, it's organized, coaching's pretty good and all that, but for the most part, the talent would be somewhere else if they could be.
That's what I was going to tell you. The thing is now that there are no secrets in the small colleges anymore,
mm-hmm.
because if you're good enough, a P4 or G5 school is going to pluck you out of there and pay you to play.
By the way, and we saw it happen here at South Alabama, not on D3 level, but they're getting plucked to death by the bigger schools. I did do a high school game on Friday night. Between Williamson and Vigor, that was very compelling. And I know that, you know, you don't have time to pour over high school football for sure. But Drew, I think all 11 of Williamson's players on defense have been offered scholarships. Mm-hmm. Many of them to the higher level. It was, and the grit and the want to on the field
and the execution
was astounding.
Well, that's impressive because there aren't many teams around that can say they got offers to every single player on the defensive side. There's no way.
Yeah, and then many of the players are younger, like sophomores and even freshmen, but they've been offered already. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Matt, Bill, think about that. I mean, I think we had like six when I was, in high school, and that was the whole team. So, that's pretty impressive.
It really is, and you'll be watching them. We'll all be watching them in the next level for the next few years. Drew, as always, really appreciate our conversation we have with you on Monday mornings in the Panini Senior Bowl. Like I've said, it'll be here before we know it, January 31st, and at seniorbowl.com you have all the great information up there. And is that also where folks can go ahead and purchase tickets?
Absolutely, yes. Get to it now because those chairbacks are going fast. Mm-hmm. And again, that stadium is a – I don't think there's a bad seat in that entire stadium in Hancock-Whitney.
Agree with that. Drew, thanks again for your time this morning.
Thank you.
All right, Panini, Senior Bowl, Executive Director Drew Fabianich. Good breakdown of some of the players from this weekend.
It's time for Football Friday with Paul Feinbaum, presented by Bryant Bank. Your hometown bank with big bank benefits. Located in Mobile and Baldwin counties. Now, here's Dan Brennan and Dalton Erwig.
And now, here's Paul Feinbaum. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, guys. Another weekend has arrived.
It has. And for one referee, according to at least one news outlet, there's one that's not going to be on the field of play. What do you make of the story about the suspended ref?
Ken Williamson.
Ken Williamson. But it's only being seen on one website, the story itself?
Hey, listen, I don't want to come off like some politician here saying I don't know anything about it. but I don't. But I know one thing. I saw the same game you did, and that would have been a pretty good conclusion. But as of this moment, nobody is confirming that story, which may tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, it's interesting, and of course, no doubt there were debates about that game and also the week prior with the Oklahoma play against Auburn. So it's interesting, and so many people asking for changes to be made, and this would certainly be a change, but I guess we'll just have to see kind of what plays out from the league as we move forward.
Yeah, what's interesting is that I think had there not been the bad calls, Hugh Freeze would be in worse shape today, but I think some Auburn people are saying, you know what, we probably should have won one or two of those games.
Yep.
So they're being a little more cautious.
Well, I know the fact that they're using the term permanently suspended, I guess that's what happened to Billy Napier. And Sam Pittman and now Billy Napier are being permanently suspended. Is that when you're fired, I guess?
Yeah, when you are permanently suspended, that means you're not coming back.
Right. Under any circumstance.
No, you're gone. Yeah, the SEC has never been particularly transparent about stuff with officiating, so don't expect anything now.
Okay.
So who is next? I mean, Napier now gone, so the reports seem to have been correct coming from those booster meetings because they beat Mississippi State. It was ugly. I mean, a two-point win, but Napier's gone as expected. Who's next? Freeze, Beamer, are those the hottest seats right now in the SEC?
Yeah, there's no doubt Freeze is the hottest, and what's interesting about this weekend is, Auburn is at Arkansas. I'll have to go back about 20 years, but maybe even longer. But think about the coach who is currently at Arkansas, Bobby Petrino. Remember him?
He was
supposed to be the Auburn coach in 2003. He had been the previous offensive coordinator, and then Auburn essentially hired him to replace then coach Tommy Tuberville. It got out in the media thanks to Tuberville's astute political skills of leaking it to a certain reporter in Birmingham at the time on his phone, and it metastasized, and he ended up not only saving his job but nearly won the national championship the next year.
I remember hearing that all play out On my radio, and you were certainly right in the middle of it, yes.
That's, so we'll see.
But what if Petrino won this game? That would help him get the Arkansas job and almost certainly cost Hugh Freeze the Auburn job.
Yeah, it just keeps going around in circles here. You had to remind me about that whole Petrino, Auburn, Tuberville, and the Jet. That stuff was that was like drama. Cloak and dagger, yeah.
Yeah, happened in November of 03. Auburn had been the preseason number one team, had a terrible season, and that all took place the week before the Iron Bowl. The president was on a plane, the athletic director, boosters, and it got out. And Tuberville barely survived even then. I mean, but the relationship was never the same, though. I assure you.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, on top of that, Auburn overtime loss, another brutal one, and now they're have lost 11 of their last 13 in the SEC. Freeze 5-15 in league play and underwater at home at Jordan-Hare Stadium. I think 9-10 in his career with Auburn. So that win against Arkansas, he's gonna have to pick it up this week. You would imagine for him to keep his job.
Yeah, there's no hope if he doesn't. If he wins a game, then it just then you can say, oh, okay. Well, what if he goes on the road and beats Vanderbilt? Right now it's week to week.
I hate when fans of losing teams say we could have won that game, we should have won that game. But watching Tennessee and Alabama on Saturday night, Tennessee had the horses to run with Bama. But like so often on the road for Josh Heupel teams, miscues and you can't get past
penalties.
The penalties for sure, but at the end of the first half, that pick six going the other way when you come out of a timeout, I think everyone knew they were going to throw the ball with how much time was on the clock.
Yeah, like 9 seconds.
What do you make of that loss, not just a loss to Bama, but it ended up looking like Bama ran away with it, even if that statistically wasn't the case?
Yeah, that's a terrible call because – I mean, everybody in football knows that that's probably the most vulnerable spot on the field. If you catch it, it's a touchdown. If you intercept it, it's a touchdown.
Yep.
So you have to know that. And I believe Josh Heupel knows that. He was a nearly Heisman Trophy winning quarterback at Oklahoma. And I've seen that. Remember 2 years ago, Alabama was in a similar situation. Tennessee just doesn't, they're not a road team. Yeah. And that was a game that Tennessee could have really been in it, and they blew it. Alabama has been uncanny in these tight games.
Your Monday pen pals got a big game this weekend, kind of a put up or be quiet with LSU hosting Texas A&M. Everything's right there for Brian Kelly and his team at home, at night, but are they the better team?
Oh, no, they're not the better team, and very quickly, Brian Kelly is also nearly underwater with his fan base.
Yeah, I know.
They are hopping mad. Not to throw myself into every conversation here, but that Monday's conversation with Brian Kelly, I think I would have rather had my fingernails pulled out. It was really tough. I'm thinking about taking off next Monday, just in the event they lose.
He might know why if you do that. But Vanderbilt's the one who beat them, and to be favored in an SEC game, period, for Vanderbilt, that just doesn't happen. And last week was the first time in a long time. Well, they're favorites again this weekend with another ranked team coming to town in Missouri. How long can Pavia and crew keep this rolling?
I mean, they're very good. I mean, I don't know if they're great, but they're probably good enough to beat Missouri at home. Now, the one thing you have to worry about here is that, now they've got all the bands and the circus in town, the game days there. Mm-hmm. And you have to wonder, how does Vanderbilt deal with that? I mean, they dealt with it very well against LSU, which I think is a better team than Missouri. But I interviewed Eli Drinkwitz the other day, and you could tell he was acting like, we don't belong in the same field with Vanderbilt.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say that's incorrect for sure. They can play with Vandy. And I saw that interview, by the way, and he was very, very coy about it. Beamer ball not exactly taken off in South Carolina this year. They've got roster changes. It looks like they didn't replenish and aren't nearly the team that they were last year. At least that's what things would be, that would be would indicate to this point of this season, we're more than halfway through, so Bama's not going to have trouble at South Carolina, are they?
I don't think so. Because, I mean, not only South Carolina having a bad year, I mean, there are times they just look terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they have just been stuffed badly by teams. And, I mean, the only concern, I mean, if you want to draw up a scenario, I mean, this is, what, the fifth game in a row against, I wouldn't call this a good team, but it is on the road against a team that nearly beat Alabama last year. Mm-hmm. I would have told you in July, I thought this was maybe one of the most dangerous games on the schedule for Alabama, but
sure.
I don't feel like that the day before. And I just think Alabama just gets in there and gets a win because Beamer, if he loses this game, he has to start looking around because he'll be fired next year if he's not careful. And I think he could probably still land a second-tier job like Virginia Tech and probably be welcomed back as a hero.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, and that's been the talk so much on your show this week, Beamer to Virginia Tech eventually. How do we know Va Tech doesn't have their sights set a little bit higher? I mean, do they deserve to have their sights set higher? I don't know, and Beamer obviously synonymous with that school.
Yeah.
They really don't deserve to be considered. I mean, they could hire one of you two, and that would be an improvement over what they have.
I'll take the job. That sounds good to me. I guess we can wrap it up with the only other top 25 matchup in the SEC, and there are three this week, but this one kicks off at 11 a.m. The Sooners, who came off a dominating win over that South Carolina team last week, and then Ole Miss after that loss to Georgia. How do they respond in Norman at 11 a.m. on Saturday?
I don't know, but I will be inside that stadium reporting live, so I can tell you. And I can't tell you how excited I am to make my second trip to Oklahoma in just a matter of weeks.
Mm. I can tell.
Yeah, no, I've had a really good schedule this year. Two trips to Missouri, two to Oklahoma. I don't know how I've missed Kansas.
Have you been to Lexington? Lexington yet?
No, I haven't been anywhere but Oklahoma and Missouri. it's such a weird matchup because, Oklahoma and Ole Miss, I mean, you just never think of those two schools in the same sentence, but if Ole Miss can win this game, I mean, they are literally in the playoffs. They have, like, one more difficult game the rest of the way. Oklahoma has to win, though, conversely, because they have Alabama, they have LSU, they have a couple of other games. So it's a real test, and Mateer came back too early, but I think 2 weeks later he probably ought to be okay as the Oklahoma quarterback. I was really disappointed in Ole Miss last week, the way they just collapsed in the final quarter against Georgia. But, you know, Lane Kiffin at halftime was checking his phone to see if anything had happened to Napier. So you have to give him a pass on that.
Yeah, he was distracted a little bit. It's hard to hold on to a lead when you're distracted.
Yeah, but listen, you can't blame Lane. I mean, he's he turned down Auburn to stay at Ole Miss, and now everybody thinks he's there for life. I don't know about that.
Yeah, LinkedIn Lane.
Yeah, Lane definitely is intrigued by the Florida job, but he can't let that distract him this week like he did last week.
Well, if he liked the hot yoga that he was taking, was that in Athens last week?
Yeah. He was saying that Kirby needs to be doing the hot yoga. Okay. That was his point.
I think there's probably some better hot yoga studios in Florida than you'll get in Mississippi or
probably
wherever he was. So that keep an eye on that, I'm sure. Paul, we appreciate every week you coming on with us. Such great insight. And, of course, we love listening in the afternoons as well here on FM Talk 106.5. So we appreciate you coming on.
Hey, guys, it is always a pleasure, and keep those donuts. I'm sorry. Thanks for everything.
Thank you, Paul. Paul Feinbaum on Football Fridays every Friday morning on FM Talk 106.5, and it's brought to you by Bryant Bank.
That's right. More Mobile mornings on the way, 251-343-0106, if you want to get in. Welcome back to Dan and Dalton's College Football Show, and thank you to Paul Feinbaum and Drew Fabianich for joining us this week. Always delightful to talk with folks who are in the know.
We love to welcome the experts in.
We do.
So you get some expertise at some point.
I mean, we are the real experts.
Yeah,
but
of course
it's nice
we are.
To let others
get the spotlight as well.
Yeah, share a piece of the pie.
So. Poor fellas.
We have. It doesn't seem this weekend's games are as highly billed as some of the weekends we've had here recently.
That might be true, Dalton, but I see some games here that I really, really am interested in, mm-hmm. and are going to play a big,
big part of the weekend?
Yeah, I think big part of the college football playoff.
Mm.
Who gets in, who gets out? I think some teams might eliminate themselves this week.
Yeah, we are getting to that point
yeah.
where it's win or go home almost.
Yep.
Win or go to the Bahamas Bowl, I guess you could say. And still with 10, basically all season long, 10 ranked SEC teams, we're getting top 25 matchups week in and week out, and another three just in the SEC this week alone. But let's start in the order that they have them situated on Run Your Pool, in these games we're picking against the line. So Oklahoma is at home. Last week took care of business against South Carolina. The Sooners are 4.5-point favorites over number 8-ranked Ole Miss. Of course, the Rebels, coming off of a tough loss, fell apart in the fourth quarter against Georgia. That's an 11 a.m. kickoff in Norman, Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I'm gone with Ole Miss in this game. I was so impressed with their offense three quarters of that game against Georgia. Their defense is not very good. But so I'm having second thoughts, but I went ahead. Oklahoma, Ole Miss to at least cover.
And you heard Feinbaum say there, if Ole Miss wins this, they're basically in the playoff.
Yeah.
But they're dogs, and they're coming off that tough loss.
Yep.
It's an 11 a.m. kick. I keep picking against the Sooners, and it keeps hurting me
in yep.
our pick'em pool. So I'm going to take Oklahoma in this one to cover the 4.5 points. Another early kickoff. I believe they'll kick off around 11:45, something like that, Saturday morning. And Arkansas is at home, 0.5-point favorite against Auburn, basically a pick'em.
Maybe this is the team that Auburn can get their offense right against, because Arkansas has had a terrible year all year long against nearly everybody defensively. At the same time, this team scores points, and mm-hmm. that's generally what happens with Petrino. So I'm going with Arkansas. It's not really to cover because it's only 0.5 point. So if yeah. you win, you
Arkansas
win.
Arkansas to win at home. Yeah. I'm with you on that one. Everything is trending against Auburn. And even though they're having close games against ranked good teams.
Just like last week, yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one, but I feel like Arkansas is due in a way also. And why not this week, right? Vanderbilt, again, favored at home in a top 25 matchup. This time, they have the Missouri Tigers fresh off their overtime win against Auburn coming to Nashville. And Vanderbilt, of course, winning against LSU last week as favorites.
Yeah, so can they do it again? 2 weeks in a row at home, high-profile games, ranked SEC opponents. And I'm just going to go, you know, prove me wrong. Vandy, 2.5-point favorites, I'll go with the Commodores.
I'm sticking with them, too. We're on the same side on that one. And my first time really looking at the renovations for Vandy, watching the full game against LSU. You know, I tune in from time to time, obviously, with the Commodores, but I've never really looked at the stadium. Looks great now.
It does.
It looks really nice. And more importantly, a lot more Vanderbilt fans are being loud there in Nashville.
Yeah, it's a completely new. It's been transformed by the stadium and by the winning attitude and by the wins.
They're the best football team in Nashville. College or pro.
Yeah, they right are now. Right now.
I'm taking Vanderbilt and Pavia to do another Heisman pose. Texas, how do they come out of that tight win? They were completely outgained, outplayed, I think, against Kentucky, but won in overtime. And they're up against a team in Mississippi State who, like Arkansas, absolutely desperate for a win in the SEC. The Longhorns are 6.5-point favorites on the road.
So check this out. Texas was badly outplayed. I think we figured that out. I did during the show. I didn't realize there was such a disparity in the mm-hmm. total yards. Kentucky beat their butt.
Yeah.
Now they're on the road again against a team in the SEC that's considered one of the on the lower rungs, and they're going to find out that this is going to be a physical game again this week. SEC, no pushovers in the entire league, and I'm going with Mississippi State too. At least cover.
We're on the same side on that one, too. Yeah, I'm on Mississippi State. I mean, prove us wrong, Arch. Yep. Prove us wrong, Sarkisian. Right. Your offense has not looked good.
No.
This is a tough one, and had to throw this game in. There weren't as many premier games, but this one's interesting to me. UCLA on a heck of a run, but this is the toughest game they've had this year. Number 2-ranked Indiana, who just wins and wins and wins.
Wins big.
They're at home, and they're favored by 24.5 points over UCLA, and it's the offensive coordinator everyone's talking about, not the interim coach, Neuheisel, but with Nico Iamaleava at quarterback, they've found a way to turn things around after firing their coach.
Yeah, they found a way to turn things around, and it's going to get turned back around on them this week. I know that's a lot of points, 24 and a half, but Indiana, I think they're that good.
I've always said I think Nico is the best quarterback, and I think that, okay, so I was trashing Nico early in the year, and I don't think he's played like some amazing hero ball, but he's doing what UCLA needs, and this offense they're running now seems to be moving. I think they keep it within the 24 and a half points.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with that. And breaking my rule on these Big Ten teams out of L.A. moving across the country, they usually don't perform well, but I'm going to take UCLA. BYU, fresh off that win in the rivalry game against Utah, are 2.5-point dogs this week, and they're on the road playing Iowa State. So Iowa State favored by 2.5 in a matchup that's pretty big in the Big 12 this weekend.
It's big and it's boring. It's boring because Iowa State is kind of boring. That first game in Ireland, they might just ban the sport from Ireland after watching. Yeah. They played Kansas State, and it was a real sleep fest. That's kind of the kind of team they are, looking at their schedule. I know they're home, and I know they're favored, but I'm going to go with BYU.
Okay, yeah. And, you know, coming off a rivalry game, that's always difficult. But Iowa State's coming off two losses on the road. They lost at Cincinnati and then at Colorado. Now they're back home. I think I'm going to stick with BYU in this one. Not mainly just head-to-head, BYU. They beat Colorado at Colorado 24-21. Last week, Iowa State lost at Colorado by a touchdown. So I know it's not always apples to apples, but I'm going to stick with BYU in this one. Bama, 12.5-point road favorites over South Carolina.
Yep, I'm going to go with Bama. They're playing great. South Carolina having a disappointing season for a lot of reasons, and I think that disappointment continues.
Yeah, if Bama have been able to do enough to win against really good teams and then win by enough points to cover, I think they won't have as much of an issue against South Carolina.
Agree.
Another top 25 matchup and rivalry game here, LSU at home with the Texas A&M Aggies, ranked third in the nation, favored by 2.5 in Baton Rouge.
I don't know that you have a coach that is disliked by his fan base more than Brian Kelly. There's fan bases that don't like their coach necessarily because they're not winning enough. But this almost gets just down to personal. Like, they don't like the guy. And that's some of what Paul Feinbaum's got to talk to him about on Mondays. That's probably why it's so uncomfortable. So I'm going to go with A&M. I know LSU's at home, night at Baton Rouge, Saturday night. That's typically all for them. I think Texas A&M is just a better team.
Yeah, that makes sense, common sense. And I keep picking LSU and keep losing. But I'm going to go against the grain once again here. And this is just a pure chaos pick for the college football playoff. So I'm going to take LSU to win at home under the lights. Tennessee is an away team and are 9.5-point favorites at Kentucky.
The Kentucky team that undressed Texas, though they lost to them. So that's a team that really plays very, very differently at home. And I would say that that's a lot of points. So I'm going to go with UK to cover.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with Kentucky to cover as well, even though I'm hoping that my Vols pull out the big win. But anytime you put as much emotion and then your body's on the line like the Vols did against Bama last week and then come up woefully short, that has to sting.
Well, Kentucky did the same thing. You know, they put it all on the line against a very physical Texas team, and they lost that game.
Yeah, but I know this is going to be a rock fight. Maybe if Tennessee holds Kentucky off the board, but I'm going to take Kentucky to cover the 9.5. And then we'll wrap it up here. Another big game in the Big 12. And Arizona State ranked and at home 7.5-point favorites over Houston.
Sam Levitt, the quarterback for Arizona State, had a big game last week. They had the win against
Texas Tech.
That was an upset, as it turned out. So I will go ahead and say that Arizona State will stay hot. That's a lot of points in the Big 12, but I'll go with the Sun Devils.
And it's at Arizona State.
Yeah. A lot of points.
Yeah, that 7.5, you know, that hook above the touchdown. I'm taking Houston with the points.
Okay.
So give me Houston and the 7.5. And I like it. I like my picks. Not as big a fan of the ones you picked. You went the opposite side of me, but
yeah, we'll know Monday.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We'll settle it all out.
So I'm going to need you to text me. I'm going to be camping on the beach late Saturday night. So some of these games you're going to have to keep me updated on.
I will. I'll be happy to do that.
By the way, I love, you know, we don't comment too much on the media landscape, but having the games on ABC and they've had so many games with large viewership with these SEC games. I love the way that they've positioned the schedule. You get a good one at 11, you get a good one at 2:30, and then a good one at 6:30.
Or a great one.
Or a great one.
They've been, I agree, ABC hit it out of the park and with that format. I think it makes the SEC look good and makes ABC's numbers look good.
Yeah, and you don't have to change the channel.
That's right, that's right.
All right, that does it for this week's Dan and Dalton's College Football Show. We'll see you same time, same place next week. Have a good one.